You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
All right. Welcome to episode 9 of the Beer Tour Guy show here at the Podcast Detroit studios in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan on this beautiful wintery mix of a day here. I'm pretty excited for episode 9. Got one of my favorite people in that I've been looking forward to the show for a while. I got Lee, the owner of Fillmore 13 out of Pontiac, Michigan with me today. Welcome to the show, Lee. Thanks for coming on.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
We are sitting here, got a great growler, a couple awesome pint glasses, and we're drinking this, what is this, a guava IPA?
Guava IPA. We were going to do this in the spring, summertime, but Bo, our brewer, talked me into doing it now and let people think about spring and summer ahead of time, and it's working out good.
We had a perfect day since it's real snowy, and I'm thinking, oh my God. This morning, I had a meeting out at another brewery working on one of the other events that I'll tell you about offline when we're done. But and I'm driving there, and it's the event's going to be about bike tours. I'm thinking, what am I doing even leaving my house this morning to go talk about bike tours? But it's the dedication toward getting stuff done ahead of time. So drinking a more summery beer right now is what the doctor ordered in my mind.
Oh, yeah. It gives us a little spring forward. Think about the good weather coming up here pretty soon before we know it. So, no, we're excited about it. We do that, too. We usually go by seasons when we make our seasonal beers. But sometimes we'll just flip a coin and say, let's do something crazy. Let's make a 10% stout in the middle of summertime and let's do a guava IPA in January. So
right.
It's a good response for it too.
So starting with a beer is a good way to then back up, and let's start with kind of some of your background. I've known you for a bunch of years from different jobs you've had, different places you've worked at. Why don't you give me some of your background of kind of how you started in the kind of restaurant bar / now I'm a brewery owner world. And we'll kind of get it all the way up to where you are at Fillmore 13 now, and then we'll talk a bit about Fillmore 13 at that point.
Absolutely. It started when right out of high school. I was looking for a part-time job, and I got one at one of these small party stores. And on the weekend, we'd hit a couple bars with the guys, and I always see their tip jar. I'm like, wow, they're making a lot more money than I am. I think I can do this.
You did the math in your head. You're like, I like money.
So I went out looking for a bartending gig, and I couldn't find one anywhere. And, everywhere I walked into, they wanted experience and, 3-4 years experience and what have you. And I offered probably about 15 bars I went into, and I said, I'll work for free. Just teach me. And they said, well, legally we can't, that's not how it works. And I ended up working at Max and Irma's at 14 Mile and Orchard Lake as a barback.
Okay.
Which they had a nice crowd on the weekends. It was more of a bar night than anything else. You think Max and Irma's, you think a family restaurant, but the one on 14 Orchard Lake in West Bloomfield, I believe, or Bloomfield Hills, really drew a night crowd, and it was more of a bar scene than anything else.
Yeah, you're right. I wouldn't think of that for Max and Irma's. But then again, I've been in other markets, and I've seen where same thing, like a TGI Friday seems to get a later night bar crowd too. So you were exposed to that through this job.
Yeah, so I started as a barback, and it was great. I was watching the bartenders, see what they're doing and how they're mixing drinks, and I took a couple empty bottles at home, started practicing at home. And, in this business – The shelf life for servers and bartenders is not usually very long. And so my manager at the time calls me up and says, hey, do you have a white shirt, a button shirt, and do you have a tie? I said, yeah. He said, well, put that on. You're bartending today. Just like that. I come in and I start as a bartender. And, usually I took care of business. So, I cared about my customers. I cared about the way I was making drinks and conversation and what have you.
So you started figuring out the service, the good customer service side of it, and how important that was?
Because I wanted to be treated that way when I went out, regardless of what age or, what you're wearing and how you're walking in the place. So did that for about maybe 6 months. And then their general manager at the time came to me and said, we'd like you to become a manager here. We like your attitude. We like what you're doing. And it shows like you're very sincere and you care about this kind of work. So I took on the manager's job, and I was a floor manager there for about 4 years. And I really liked it. I learned a lot about how the corporate world works, how why they're consistent, why they do the way things they do.
The systems, why they put certain systems in place.
Yes, yes. And, you know, at the same time, you know, you really can't think that much for yourself. You can't come up with new ideas because it's all done at corporate and what have you. But it was okay for me. It was a good learning experience. After that, I went to Outback Steakhouse as a floor manager as well. And I almost bought into the company. And it just, you know, it was 125 grand. I still remember to buy in.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, you can
what,
buy in.
When was this? Do you remember what year was that?
This was in 93, 94.
Okay. So kind of early on for where Outback Steakhouse was in the market. There weren't as many of them.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of them. And they were just popping up in Michigan here.
They were just dinner at first, weren't they? They didn't originally have a lunch program.
Yeah, it was a 4 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Oh,
kitchen
okay.
Time,
that's then, right.
And so the buy-in, I was, you know, almost ready to do that. And, you know, you become a general manager and then you get 10% of, you know, after, you know, profits and what have you.
Oh, all right.
Investing
okay.
that money in. But I didn't have time in the company and that's why they turned it down.
Okay. You know?
So I was there for about 2-3 years and something close opened up by my house, Joe Dumars Fieldhouse.
Oh, very familiar with Joe Dumars. Yeah.
Yeah, a big sports facility. And I actually went in and I applied. As a head bartender and as a manager, and they didn't hire me. So one of my friends got hired in with a lot less experience, and I it was kind of funny, and I said, Dave, I'm coming with you to orientation. he says, you didn't get hired. I said, I don't care. I'm coming with you.
Ah, I like that.
So I honestly went in and sat during orientation, and they're passing out the paperwork to fill out. And I said, Miss, I don't have my paperwork here. And so, what's your name? Who interviewed you? I said, I don't remember. And she said, what'd you apply for? I said, head bartender or manager. She's like, well, fine. Here, fill out some paperwork. And I was in the system. I was I was hired in that day.
Oh, that's awesome. I like knowing. That. Just show
so,
up.
Yeah. So I managed there for about 4 years. And
are there two locations at Joe Dumars?
The one I was at in Utica opened up first.
Okay. That was the first one.
95, 96, I believe.
Yeah. And, that's the one I'm familiar with.
Yeah. And then I think they opened a smaller version of it in Detroit.
Yeah, I just can't think of where. Oh, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Good but I think that's fairly recent, isn't it? Or not as long ago.
Not as long, yeah. But good people to work for. And again, I had the authority to work with a general manager, you know, hand in hand. And we were able to come up with different promotional ideas and ways to bring new people in and push our product. So it was a good learning experience from there. I've always loved the whole beer aspect, the craft beer industry. And at that time in 96, 97, there weren't that many breweries out.
Right. We were still in that kind of phase one with only a handful really in the Detroit market.
Yeah, I think there was about a dozen at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw an ad in the paper while I was still working for Joe Dumars, and it was a Copper Canyon brewery in Southfield. New brewery coming in, apply within. So I didn't want the headaches of the management and the schedule of the manager's duties and all that stuff, you know, because I was getting ready to get married and, you know, I needed
you wanted
to
actually hang out with your wife once in
a
while?
Yeah, I just wanted some time and I just didn't want to be stuck there every weekend. And
right.
Well, that didn't last long. So I got hired in as the head bartender there. And Ed Meary, the owner at the time, really said, you know, I like, you know, what I see from you. I like your leadership. And I finally got to see your resume because I didn't even look at it. I had my general manager hire you. And he goes, you don't belong behind the bar.
And that, yeah, so you quickly saw that you had this huge breadth of experience at other establishments.
So, and I said, you know, look, I said, I'd like to do both. So I did both. I bartended and managed at the same time and really fell in love with the whole beer concept and the whole brewery concept and how everything worked. And, you know, just going to festivals and really opened our eyes to, wow, there are really this many people that like craft beer here. And, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger. And it's funny because, you know, just real quick, looking back to 97, 98 and looking at it now, I think the first festival I went to in Livonia was it was about 800 people there. And I think 760.
When the Brewers Guild did their summer beer fest in Livonia, isn't that what they did?
Yeah.
I think that's what their first one or two were there, weren't they?
So, you know, I'm trying to remember. And
I wasn't living in the market at that time, so I didn't go to those first couple. Right. I came in a few years later when I moved back here.
Yeah, all I remember was there was out of the 800 people, there was about 750 guys.
Yeah, definitely. Right. It was very male dominated.
And the girls were usually the designated driver.
Yeah.
So, but now it's turned around, which is just amazing.
It's very 50-50 now. When you look to now, that's an interesting insight. It's the same with my Motor City Brew Tours tour business. I'm very 50-50 in the business. And I think when I first start, I'm like, oh, I'm going to market to homebrew clubs. And but that's very small. What I have homebrewers come on tours, but it's really casual people that want to go out and have a good time. And having a good time means going to a brewery and having locally made beer and good food.
I agree.
So you stayed at Copper Canyon pretty close to the end or the whole time?
The whole time.
The whole time, right?
15 years.
Okay, that's what I thought. And that's where I met you. I met you somewhere, I don't even remember when, probably early 2000s when I started going to Copper Canyon. Yeah. Befriended you, eventually met now your brewer at Fillmore, Bo. Definitely knew the head brewer there, Copper Canyon, Todd Parker.
Yes.
I was pretty regular at the beer posiums that he would do there. Those were a lot of fun.
Those were fun.
I really cried when Copper Canyon closed because I knew I wasn't – it was a monthly regular thing I did. And I got to learn a lot about beer through attending those there.
Yes. Yes. Now, we it was a lot of fun there. I mean, we learned a lot of you know what to do and what not to do again, especially with the brew industry. You know, the owner got tired of it and just fell behind on a few things and just decided, I'm 65, I'm done with it.
Right.
Time to close the doors. And
that building still sits there today, doesn't it?
The building still sits there, and the equipment just came out of there actually a couple of days ago.
Oh, I didn't know that, really? Who bought it, the equipment?
Matt Allen bought it, our first brewer.
Which, yeah. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Copper Canyon, yeah. And he bought it, and he's helping a new brewery in Indiana
open
up with that new equipment. So, which is really cool to see. At least it's being used as back in the industry.
It's always good to see it get reused.
Oh yeah, solid equipment, good stuff. So,
wow. Okay,
yeah, 15 years, and
that's a scoop.
The door was closed. I almost bought Copper Canyon, by the way.
So that was something that you considered at one point. In it?
I did. I when Ed left, it went into the hands of a kind of an arbitrator, not bank, but a private owner that took over. And we made a couple of deals and, you know, it worked out, but, you know, it just didn't work out the time-wise. He wanted his money up front, you know, right now, you know.
He wanted it all now.
He said, I want it in 2 weeks. And I said, that's not how it works.
I'm not just sitting on that money.
I'm not a drug dealer.
Right. Could you do that in cash and show up at my house in a bag?
He really did.
A bag. I'm like, yeah, okay. Oh, my gosh.
So, but the price was great. I really thought I was going to be in there because my bank backed us up. And but, you know, time-wise, it didn't work out with him. And, the agreement didn't work out. So
okay. So that fell through.
Fell through, moved on, and found out that talked to Brett and Eric Coonan. I heard they were opening a new place in Clinton Township.
So the Coonan and Clinton, yeah.
Yeah. So I got together with them, and we had a couple of interviews, went back and forth. And, you know, they gave me an opportunity to help them open their doors and work the front of the house manager there. So I was their general manager there for about a year and a half almost. And are really good people to work for. And
I've known them for a real long time too. Probably almost as long as I've known you. Yeah. And I've always had good experiences there for sure. It's a regular route for me. I had a lot of fun when they did the grand opening and you were kind of running the grand opening of the Clinton Township location. And I came out there. That's when I learned that you were doing that. I don't think I knew that before then. I'm like, hi, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And that was fun to basically like the friends and family that all got invited out. The service level was, you could tell that you knew what you were doing right away. My wife was pretty impressed when we walked in there, and it was a food dish was included. And I think we had a token for a beer or something like that was how it worked. And all the staff was really on point right out of the gate. And when places first open, that's not how things typically work. It's very hard to do that, isn't it?
No, you're right. You're 100% right. Especially when we interviewed over 400 people and ended up hiring about 60 of them. And,
wow. You know, that's a lot of interviews.
It was a lot of interviews. I had a lot of help from the other managers around. And, but you know, in the Warren location, they don't do a lot of food there and they don't have a kitchen. And, really when they started, small, and they hired people as they went on.
Yeah.
You know, they
very organically.
Yeah. They hired them as they needed them as they grew. So they didn't hire them you know, 60 people.
Yeah, that's a lot. And what a big difference.
Yeah, and I, you know, that all that experience and from my background from working for Max Dinner and Outback Steakhouse, being the corporation they are, really helped out, helped me organize and get things in order and set some rules down. And this is what we're doing.
So you left them in a better place for sure when you moved on. Yeah, you'd like to think so, right? You like to think so.
But we had a structure. We had, you know, these are our rules. You know, we're very easy to work with, but this is not a playground. You know, come in, do your part, make your money, and have a great night. And let's see you again tomorrow.
Right.
And that was my, you know, that's been my whole attitude, even whether I owned it or not own it. Even if I'm doing it for other people, if they're trusting me to be in charge, then.
Treat people like you own it, even if you don't own it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I try to, any of the tour guides who work for me, that's my attitude with them. I'm like, every single customer matters, and you want to, you know, treat them like they're a guest in your house.
Yeah.
And people remember that because, you know, that's not how, as we know, that's not how customer service works throughout, you know, other aspects of the bar, restaurant industry or service industry. It's challenging to get people to buy in, I think, to that level of service. And that's why I'm real careful about the people that I bring on. It's friends, family typically are the people or a really good customer that I've kind of befriended in my process of running tours have been people that I've brought on, and they have to believe in it, meaning they're empowered to make it right if something doesn't work right. And I'm not going to sit there and nickel and dime and worry about if they had to buy someone an extra beer or if they gave them a free shirt or something because something was off, because I want the person who had the problem to leave there going, well, this didn't work right, but I walked out of here thinking they made it right and I see that they care and they want to fix it. So by you bringing that ethic to all those places you've worked for, that really kind of sets you up for success with what you're doing now with Fillmore 13 Brewery.
Yeah, and you know, service will – good service, bad service, you know, it'll make you or break you, and word gets around very fast. So my whole – the way I look at that is, you know, any customer that walks in your door passed up many, many other bars and restaurants. Chose to come to you. So let's make them feel welcome. Let's take care of them while they're here. Let's say thank you on their way out and – you know, make a table visit. It's not going to kill you to make a table visit.
Right.
It takes 30 seconds. How's your food? How's your service? Everything good? Thank you. Thank you for coming in.
When it was your grand opening last year in March, when you had friends and family come out and you graciously invited myself and my wife and a couple of my tour guides came with me, and we all walked out of there with that feeling.
Right.
And it was great. One, we enjoyed the pizza and we enjoyed the beer. But your staff was really on point right out of the gate in there. And my two friends commented that goes, why can't the last time I've been to a new opening of a place where the staff was really solid right out of the gate and they weren't really running around confused. They knew what was going on. And you were walking around as, you know, captain of everything, and it was all in control. I really enjoyed that about it. I knew right away that everything I remembered about you was all going to work here too in that way. So I applaud you for that.
Well, it was real simple. You know, when we hired all our staff and what an amazing staff we've had, 90% of them are still there.
That seems pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
About to hit 1 year.
Yeah. So when we hired him, you know, I looked at everybody's application and resume and the first thing I said is, well, you know, it looks like we have over 150 years experience between us. So, you know, we can't screw this up.
We can't screw this up. I like that.
this is a lot of experience here on paper. So let's take the experience on paper and make it happen in real time. And, you know, and we did.
So we talk about it opened up, but let's talk about, let's back up a little bit. So you wanted to open this brewery on your own. You have a business partner, Howard Williams, correct?
Howard Williams, yes.
Yeah. So you guys looked at other sites, including like what you already said, you considered the Copper Canyon site in Southfield. So where were some other places or cities at least that you were kind of looking at? And then what got you to Pontiac?
We looked at probably 15, 20 other cities.
Well, that's a lot. Okay.
That is a lot. We looked at Utica. We found a building, made an offer. They didn't take it. And it was a very reasonable offer. It was an offer from more than what the building was worth with the bank, more than the building got appraised.
Okay.
Big building.
You're real serious there. Oh, well, yeah, that could totally really work in Utica.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
12,000 square foot building.
And by the way, I was born and raised in Utica. I don't know if you knew that. Nice. Yeah, my parents still live in Shelby Township.
So I
very nice.
Love that area for sure.
Yeah, so I thought
Jimmy John's Field. I love going over there for games now.
Well, this building was directly across from Jimmy John's.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So now you see that, and you're like, oh, my God.
And we knew that was coming.
Yeah, okay.
So that didn't work out. We looked at Royal Oak, and it was $30 plus a square foot.
Yeah, that'd be pretty pricey.
And it just didn't make sense, especially when you have to wait for the build-out for the 9 months to get your license from the
So you would have been sitting on a lot of real estate that you were paying for before you could be open. Right. Yeah. Okay.
We looked at Livonia. We looked at Detroit. We looked at Birmingham, Bloomfield, Commerce Township, Oxford, Lake Orion.
Wow.
Macomb Township. We looked everywhere. And it was either the building didn't make sense or it's too small or low ceilings for our equipment or not enough storage space. Not enough parking, too high. The price was too high. We came to Pontiac, as my wife and I, because we used to visit Pontiac all the time before. And, you know, we're driving by and going, what a dead town. There's nothing here.
Yep.
But we saw this building, and we knew the Strand Theater was doing a huge renovation directly across from this building. So we thought, well, if we start things and, you know, other businesses will see that this is a legit downtown and we can bring this – revitalize this town and bring it back around that other investors might come in. And I knew at the time there's a lot of office buildings coming into Pontiac, a lot of people moving into offices there and residential, just not retail and restaurants at this time. So we saw the building, used to be an old art gallery. I fell in love with it. There were some offices still built, and there was still a lot of stuff left over from the art gallery. And I told my wife, I said, this is gorgeous. We can make it happen here. She looked at me and said, you're nuts. Let's get the hell out of here.
Okay.
She said, let's get the hell out of here and don't come back to this town again. And so, you know, we left and she said, well, let's go have a beer here somewhere. There was not one place in that entire strip, in that entire downtown.
Oh, wow. That's telling.
At 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, 8 p.m. to go have a drink. And there was one bar up the road and it was closed at the time. So I said, breweries build communities. I said, if we do it right, we have the know-how, and we have the financial backup for our down payment from Howard, and we can go get a loan, an SBA loan. We have a business plan already in place, and this is, you know, really everything was ready. It was just finding a location.
Yeah.
So we came back again, and she started liking it a little more. I showed it to Howard. Howard loved it. Bo Holcomb, our brewer, brought him in, and he was kind of hesitant about the downtown, of how quiet it was, and. You know, I said, let's do our part. And I always ask them the question, you know, do you guys drive 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes to go somewhere where you like? And they say, absolutely. So then why not us? Let people drive 30 minutes to come see us.
Sure.
And so we took over an old building, 1920s building, and really just renovated the whole thing. And we took an art gallery and a consignment shop and an accountant office and bulldozed everything out and made them into a functional 7-barrel brew house with a full kitchen. So it was a lot of work.
It's pretty amazing when you look at the finished product from what you started with. And I got to see it a little bit along the way and what it looks like now. Like it's great space.
Thank you. Yeah, we took we reused a lot of stuff there. We brought some barnwood in. We got some plumbing pipe and for our shelving. And we made all our tables, painted the place ourselves, and, you know, really patched the furniture together from – a consignment shop up the road to church pews from a church in Chelsea.
Okay.
You know, Chris Norton at the Glass Academy.
I know Chris.
Oh, yeah. He made all our lights above the bar, which, you know, follows the theme of a 1920s building. And the whole idea was we wanted a place where we wanted you to walk in and say, oh, my God, I want to have a beer here.
Sure.
I got to have a beer. What a cool place. And really, that's what we're after. And I think, you know, we've accomplished that so far. So it was fun. It took us about 10 months. You know, a lot of work ourselves and a lot of contract work as well. But we managed to make it functional and start brewing.
So love it. How did it feel when you were kind of ready to go, but you had to wait for licensing things to come in? What's that like? That seems like that would just be excruciating. And I'm not trying to call out the state or anything. I'm not trying to badmouth them. They're just like, that's the process and that's how life is, right? Like you ran into that, of course, during this.
You can badmouth the state. It's okay.
Yeah, I can badmouth the state. That's true. This is a podcast. I mean, we could swear and shit on here. So no big deal, right? We're not getting edited.
It took every bit of 9 months to get our license.
Wow.
And we could have had it in 5 months. And they were – the hiccup was that when we wrote in our plan, we said the license would go in a lounge. And I never paid attention to that. My lawyer did that. And then they wanted to see tap room, not lounge, because lounge usually represents mixed drinks and what have
you. Oh, yeah.
Like, okay. Are you guys kidding? What?
Wow. Just because of that.
That took about two extra months.
Wow.
And but, you know, at the same time, we were doing the build out in the summertime and contractors were hard to find and builders were hard to find.
Sure.
So that took a lot of extra time. And so it, really the timing with everything was we had the place finished. We got our food license from the health department 2 days before we opened.
Okay.
We opened on Thursday and I went to Lansing on Tuesday to get our license. And of course, I missed a piece of paper, you know, back home, and they don't want it faxed. They don't want it mail.
Right.
They wanted it now.
Oh, my gosh.
So I came back and went back to Lansing again.
Holy cow. Really?
Wow. I would have drove to California to get that license.
Yeah. At that point, you're just like, I got to make this happen.
I had a good attitude about it and said, as long as it's in my hands, I don't care how long I drive. So
I remember the first time I was doing Lansing Beer Fest in the Lansing market in Rio Town with one of my business partners, Paul Starr, I'm a Beer Hound. And then we were working with the local bar called Rio Town Pub, Roxanne, the owner there. And we were closing down a street and we were the night before and we're like in setup mode and we still didn't have the final permit from the city, even though it was like, I don't know, 4 months out, we applied for this. It should have been like a week turnaround or something. And I remember like the owner of Rio Town Pub, I swear she like knew how to get to the mayor or something. I don't know. She like called him on like a Friday night and just said, I'm about to call Fox News and they're going to come down here and talk about how, you know, Rio Town can't come back to life because the city drags their feet on all this stuff. And I was like, wow. And then like within an hour, we magically had like this permit that we needed and then everything happened. But it was super stressful because maybe not this kind of money that you're dealing with trying to open a brewery, but for us, it was a lot of money. We probably had $15,000 invested into the beer festival, all of which would have just been totally lost if we didn't have that final permit. Like that, the permitting side of it, I think for most people, when they're starting a brewery and they got all these grandiose plans, that's got to be like the biggest challenges for people. You need to just add whatever you think you should add, 6 months to a year a timeline?
We planned on hopefully finishing things in about 6 months, and we were pushed to about 10 months.
Right.
And but between licensing and, you know, working with such an old building, it was very challenging to get the
– You just uncovered things you probably didn't know about.
No, we didn't. We went to hook up the gas, and, you know, my builder comes out and goes, where's your gas line? And I said
– Isn't it there?
Yes. So what do you mean? It's the same spot it's supposed to be at. He said, well, this is not sufficient for what you're going to draw here with your kitchen and your brewery. And so $10,000 later
– Oh, my gosh.
In about 4 weeks, you know, new gas line. But, you know, same thing, ventilation for the kitchen, just took forever because of the space and, you know, the roof on the building is too old and, you know, can hold so much weight. So we had to buy indoor units to put inside.
Oh, okay. So I follow you.
That, you know, to make space for those, you know, indoor units really took a lot and, you know, the ventilation and to get it approved by the city as well and by their inspector. So it worked out good. But, you know, you were talking a couple minutes ago about last minute waiting for the license and being nervous. When we opened up Clinton Township, Coonan, we got our license at 4 o'clock, and we opened at 5.
Oh, I didn't know that happened there. Wow.
Yeah, senior, their father came to me at noon that day, and he said, we're not opening. Cancel everything.
Oh, my God.
I said, we're going to open.
Yeah, it's got to happen.
We're not canceling anything. And he goes, you're crazy. You guys are breaking the law. I said, no, we're not. I said, hang in there. We're going to make it happen. And I guess Brett went to the city and came back, you know, with an official piece of paper to go in and open. But
wow.
Yeah, it's very nerve-wracking because you invited so many people. You got your whole kitchen in place.
It's on the line.
You want to show off your new place and, you know.
People were excited to see it. They'd heard about it for multiple years in the case of Coonan. Same for you. People were excited to come out. Lots of people asked me. I was excited the first time I got to bring in a bus tour group, and
that was awesome.
And then the bike tour that we brought in there, the Cruising for the Trails charity bike event we did last fall, where you were my turnaround point. The previous year, I did that ride 1 year prior. And originally, when I went to Jason at Clubhouse BFD, that was my plan. My whole plan was, let's do we've done the spring ride for a bunch of years, and we would go to the Pink Creek Cider Mill. But I wanted to go to Pontiac on another ride with the same model. And I wanted to go to a brewery. I wanted it to be your brewery. But you weren't necessarily open by that point. You were still in build-out mode.
Right.
So we used the Lafayette Street Market, and the owner there, they were so gracious, and they hosted us there. And because they had a liquor license the way they did, we were able to serve beer there, and we still made it happen. But I'm sure you remember this. Like, I was actually biking back, right? I was biking down Saginaw Street as I was leaving that event, and you were like outside. I think you were taking a picture of your Fillmore 13 sign, or you were putting up a sign or something like that, weren't you?
We had to turn it into our design lady. She wanted to do our sign up front, and I saw you with your bike. I'm like, hey, what's he doing here?
And I just kind of waved. I'm in bike helmet mode and all that stuff, and you're like, what is going on, right? And I'm like, I'm going to talk to you again about this. And sure enough, in last fall when we did it, we had about, 150 or so riders. And that was a lot of fun. And it was a cool example of almost all those riders hadn't been there, but they were all excited to check out what you did.
No, that's awesome. That was great.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? When you can expose people in that way to what you're doing.
Absolutely. Every day when we get new people in, I welcome them, let them know, hey, we're new here. And, we heard about you. We heard about your great reviews on Yelp and Facebook. And, when we first opened, it was so nice to see people from Pontiac and Waterford come in and say, thank you for opening here. Thank you for
taking the chance. I'm sure. Because there was a big kind of hole.
Yeah.
And there's, to a certain degree, there still is. Now we're starting to see a little more happen in Waterford, soon to be more, with Little Guy Brewing whenever Mr. Todd Parker opens up, right?
Right.
But we won't talk about licenses and that. He'll probably break through a wall and come in here. But I would think you had lots of people come in that were excited they had this option now of they could get locally made beer right there.
We did. And, they looked at it also as a gathering place, as a put your phone down and let's have a conversation and have a good beer. And, and it's not, I don't have to drive, to a different downtown to go get it. This is my own downtown.
Right.
So, we're still very thankful. I still get people, we're almost a year now in, and I still get people in there, regulars that come in and say, how are you doing? We hope you're doing well. Please stay here. Don't go anywhere else.
They're vested. They're becoming vested
in
your success. They want the success. I've had people on my tours ask me about you and say that they worked in the area and that they were excited when you started offering lunch, because you waited a little time till you started opening up in that way and offering a lunch because you wanted to do it right, didn't you?
We did. I wanted to see, like I said, all my staff looks good on paper. We wanted to see how they're going to perform. And we wanted to see how they can execute. Lunch is a different animal. When you come in for lunch, you have a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And you want to be in and out, and we have to
execute. Not getting a flight of beer necessarily.
Yeah, or, laid back, and I want to get my appetizer now, and I'll wait 20 more minutes for dinner. And, we don't have 2.5 hours to spend here. We have a half hour to 45 minutes and sometimes an hour. But so we had to – I wanted to make sure my kitchen staff can execute and get food out fast, out there, and get these people back to work and in a timely manner. So, and that's why we waited a while, but it's working out good now. We're open 6 days a week for lunch. Monday's the only exception.
Okay.
And that gives me some time in the morning to go catch up with things. And
imagine that, catch up with things, huh?
Banking and, odds and ends and, last minute phone calls and emails and things like that. So,
you got Bo that you brought in as your brewer. He's doing a great job. He came from Atwater Brewery, where he was brewing for a while. You worked with him at Copper Canyon, right? He was a server at Copper Canyon, wasn't he?
Bo is an amazing person, one of the most intelligent people that I've ever worked with. I say that to him all the time. And just a really a picky brewer and a great attitude. I worked with him at Copper Canyon in 1997 when we opened. And he worked as a server and also as an assistant to Matt Allen at the time.
Okay.
So he was
I don't think I realized that at the time, that he was an assistant. I don't – why I missed that, I don't know.
Yeah, he did some work in the brewery and, Matt took him under his wings. And then after that, he went to Germany and for about 5 years, I believe.
Okay.
And he was, you know, teaching during the day and teaching English during the day and then brewing at night. And he loved it there as well. So came back. I believe he worked for Bonfire also.
Right. That's right. He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Bonfire Bistro and Brewery.
Bistro, yep.
That was in what, Northville?
Northville or Livonia.
That sounds right. There. Yeah, one of there.
But, you know, throughout the whole time, we've stayed friends and, you know, because he had a lot of friends at Copper Canyon, so he'd come back and forth. And then he was at Atwater towards the end. And he said, Lee, whenever you open your place, I want to be your brewer. He says, I take a lot of pride in making a beer and watching the customer, you know, actually drink it, and I can go have a conversation with them. He said, "Where Atwater was basically just a brewing facility more than
anything else." Yeah, he was really production. He wasn't in front of house.
Right.
None of that. Although he gave tours for my groups a few times when I'd bring bus tours in, which was always fun because I knew him and he was excited about talking about beer.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that capacity, he at least got to do that.
No, he was very excited about it and I think
I need some more beer.
It was funny. He said, "I'll take less money to work for a brewery like this and yours."
That's a big compliment.
Before I do production, you know, beer again. I said, well, good. This is going to work out just fine.
Good, because I'm going to give you less money. You want some more beer?
I'll take some more, yes.
You want some more? Okay. Thank you. Thanks for bringing a growler.
Absolutely.
That beer is real tasty.
No, that worked out good. I know I'm very thankful that he's there, and he's doing wonderful things right now.
So you did have an assistant, Natalie, right?
And
she's about to leave and go work for Founders. Is that correct? Did I understand that right?
Natalie is done with us. She gave us over a year because she was there before we opened. And, you know, she worked under Bo, and, you know, they were a good team.
Really nice person. I've known her
for
a little while, too, because she's bounced around to a few places. She also has worked at Motor City Brew Works, so I bring people in there a lot. I constantly get to see her down there.
Yeah, hard worker, always on time. But, you know, we wish her well. It's a big step for her.
Yeah, and sounds like it.
Yeah, and anyone that works for us that wants to or thinks they can better themselves with a bigger brewery or a bigger company, I don't get upset. You know, more power to you. The door's always open if it doesn't work out.
It just shows that's a great attitude for it because it really shows there's a lot of opportunity in the industry now and depending on where someone is in their life, right? Bo's at a different stage in his life than necessarily where Natalie is. Opportunities come her way. She's got to go for those things, right? That's something that I've noticed a lot the last couple of years, a bit more shuffling, but we also just have more talent in Michigan than what we would have had, say, in when Copper Canyon first opened in, you know, 96, 97 in that time frame. You know, what a difference jumping forward to now that you have a pool of people you can pull from that you wouldn't have had before.
And, you know, what a great industry, you know, to be in where we can call – we can call 10 other brewers today and say, hey, we need help or we need a bag of grain or we need, you know, a couple of pounds of hops. And I honestly think they'll be there for us and we'll do the same thing for them as well. So it's such a close family with different breweries and you know, being around and supportive of each other. So
I always feel like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been running my tour business since 2009, but I was a fan for multiple years prior to that. And that was the first thing I noticed as I started doing it, that breweries were like, sure, what can we do to help you? We're excited.
Yeah.
We want you to come in, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like not even 1% of the time have I ever run into a brewery that just, you know, couldn't accommodate what I was doing. And that's, you know, fun for me because now I feel like I'm part of that family. When I go to festivals, I get to say hi and see people I don't get to see all the time. That's a lot of fun for me. It's something that I will someday when I'm maybe not in this industry anymore, I'll miss that because really prior to that in corporate America, so you came from some bigger chains where you had some experience, you know, I didn't feel like that. And I had about 15 years of corporate experience before I started my own business. And I'll kind of agree with you. Like I learned a discipline of an aspect of customer service and I learned how putting certain processes in place matter. From a corporate standpoint, that you could now apply to your own business. This, it sounds like that's what you've done. That's definitely what I've done in my business. Would you agree that at least having some corporate experience helps you in your own small business and you can make decisions on how you want to approach it, good, bad, or indifferent? You now had that experience of being exposed to that.
No, I agree 100%. You know, at the corporate level, we learn how not to waste anything. how
yeah,
you
very true.
Use anything. And that, you know, helped me a lot in our kitchen as well over the years, whether it was at Kunin or here or Copper Canyon. You buy product that you can use three, four different dishes.
Sure.
That makes sense. You have to watch your overtime. You have to watch your labor. You know, learned a lot and you know, how to keep an eye on that.
Seems like you could quickly kill your labor budget and then you're not making any profit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look at a simple thing as if one of your kitchen guys, for example, scheduled at 5 o'clock and they clock in at 4:55, and you add that times five and you have about 25 to 30 extra minutes there, and you multiply that times a month and times a year, and that's just one simple employee. You know, same thing with, I tell the staff, I go, look, we're not penny pinchers here, but, you know, you don't need to put 13, you know, 20 napkins on the table when some guy orders a small pizza.
Yeah.
Give them two napkins, give them your silverware with the napkin. If they need more, we can always give them more. But if you don't, now you're throwing away that. And all these things cost money. It's such a nickel and dime business that as an owner, you have to worry about these things because you're writing the check.
Yeah, I think people forget that somewhere somebody's writing a check. Like if you only work for big companies, you're sort of removed from that, aren't you? And like yeah. I came from big companies and I had, you know, huge budgets. At one point I was on a team that did $25 million in revenue for the company. I want to say the retail budget that I managed just for retail services was $1 million, right? So that removes me from the nickel and dime part of it. And when I started my own business – you know, I remember friends would be like, wow, every time you buy a beer, you could like write it off. I'm like, yeah, but I'm buying the beer. So if I don't need to buy the beer, I'm not doing it because it's money out of my pocket. Like it's not that we're all cheap as owners. We want to be smart. And does it give a better experience to the customer? And are you being compensated appropriately for doing that in a margin that makes sense, right, without giving away the – everything. That's always the challenge, isn't it, in running a business?
It is. We never shortchange the customer, but, you know, little things like that. You know, just with, like I said, with extra napkins and things like that. And, you know, absolutely take care of the customer. But, you know, it's such a nickel and dime business, like I said.
Yeah.
You really have to be careful on how much you're wasting and how much. Where, you know, again, you know, a lot of your staff doesn't realize that, or just some of them might not care. But, you know, like to-go boxes and things like that, everything is so, you know, expensive and it adds up. If you add up the time as far as labor goes, if you add up your food cost, there's a reason why prices are marked the way they are. You know, you have to follow that protocol. You have to follow your food costs. You have to know how much things cost. You have to know how to order. You know, don't over-order. Don't under-order. It's really tricky
right.
business. But
I'd love to say I figured some of that out over the years, but you know, sometimes I still feel like I'm playing darts and I'm trying to get a bullseye occasionally because it's tricky and it constantly changes and you just have to you have to be paying attention.
Oh yeah. You know, you never know. Like, you know, some days we'll sell 100 pizzas.
Yeah.
Some days we'll sell two.
Yeah. So you're like, okay, so I forecasted blank and then it did right. the opposite of that.
Yeah,
I'm the same way with tours. I think some tours are going to blow up and be crazy and awesome, and then the next year it won't be. And I couldn't tell you why. And you can make guesses, but who knows? Like I've run buses to the Winter Beer Fest for a whole bunch of years here, and last year was the first year I didn't fill the bus up. You know, and I committed to buy so many festival tickets from the Guild. Like that's right. real people money.
Oh yeah.
And when I didn't sell them, you know, I'm eating certain amount of money there right. when that happens, and I'm not making the kind of profit that I came to expect. Could I tell you why that happened? I couldn't. Where this year, I did the same bus at the same cost, and I sold it out by Christmas for something that was the end of February, and then I felt all good inside. I thought, okay, so what did I do different? What was so different this year? But who knows, right? The wind blew differently, so then the demand shifted, and you're like, okay, that's
it's
tricky.
Different. Yeah, it's very challenging too. And the same thing with making beer. You know, you make a batch of beer. Well, according to last month, we sold this much, so we're going to do the same thing. And all of a sudden, you know, you're out of that beer now, and, you know, customers don't understand that. So
they don't, right? You can't just magically – it's not like a Coca-Cola products and the distributor shows up with, you know, more –
right.
Liquid for you.
I can't just go to Meijer and buy
you a 12-pack. Nope, you can't do that, can you?
So,
So that's always challenging to get that mix right. One thing I did enjoy right out of the gate was that you guys had a huge variety of beer on draft right away. How many do you have on draft typically?
Thank you for noticing that. Bo and I talked about it many times.
By the way, none of this is rehearsed, audience. I just asked him that.
It's no, it's not. I barely found the building.
Yeah, you barely found the building, so don't worry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go on.
No, I'm glad you brought that up and you noticed that. I've been to so many new breweries when they first open, and they open up with 3 to 5 beers, and
yeah,
I just don't understand it. You know, whether it's a small barrel system or a big barrel system, I wanted our customers to come in. We opened up with 18 beers, by the way.
And I wanted it was 18. Okay, 18. I was going to say 14, but yeah. 18. Okay.
And I wanted our customers to come in and just be, wow, you know, I'm going to try 2 samplers here at 8 5-ounce beers or 4-ounce beers, whatever.
My whole table got samplers when we were in on the friends and family night that you invited us to. I mean, we all wanted to just try stuff.
And then you're still, you know, there's still about 6-7 beers that you haven't had.
So totally.
That was the whole idea. Let's give everybody a variety and let's keep it consistent. This is not a fluke. This is not just because of, you know, a grand opening.
You did that by design.
We had 6 or 7 brews ready, and we thought we were getting our license to go ahead and open, and it didn't happen. So really, timing wise, it worked out in our favor where we were able to make all these beers and get them. So we opened with 18 beers and a handful as well.
Oh yeah, that's right. There's a handful. So,
It was solid. I always believed in giving people a good variety. And right now we have 23 taps, 18 beers, I believe, or 19, 2 meads and a couple of ciders.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, got to have at least a couple ciders, and having meads is a nice bonus.
Yeah, mead is all new to us, but, you know, it's funny because I said, boy, you're the expert. He said, well, this is my first batch.
Yeah, so he's the expert for you two. Yeah.
But it's gone good so far, and but 23 taps.
So that means you have a small winemaker's license and a brewery license, right?
Yes, the winemaker's license took us a while to get. It took us about 7 months.
Yeah, that's a longer process, isn't it?
It's really unbelievable how long that took, and maybe the state can do something about it. If you're an
REO, be great to get it all out of the gate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but and if you're already an open establishment doing business,
you're doing stuff. Yeah.
What else are you checking here?
Yeah.
You know, we're ready to go. I'm paying you my taxes, obviously. We're open. You know, you see the
health codes, all those things were dealt with. Yeah.
Inspections and building in the city and everything else. We had to do that all over again.
Wow.
It took us 7 months to get it. But it was very important. You know, as you know, a lot of people like wine and don't like beer, and some like ciders and don't like beers. And
so you're getting wine from somewhere else then? Is that how that works?
Yeah.
I haven't come in and asked for wine, so I just haven't paid attention. Sorry.
No, there are 2 ways we can do it. We can either make our own, and we're not experts at making wine. And so we went to we teamed up with Fen Valley Vineyards.
Yep.
In Fenville, Michigan, right by Holland, Michigan out there.
Yeah, very familiar with Fen Valley. Yeah,
cool place. And we buy wine in bond. So they send us I picked out a lineup of 6-7 different wines. We get the bottles naked. And we put our logo on them.
Oh, okay. So that's when you say wine and bond. That's really what that means. Yep. Okay.
So they sell the wine and bond in cases, no label. We have to put our label on it, and on the back, their label as well.
Okay.
So you're drinking Fillmore 13 wine, but it's made in Fenville.
Fenville.
So
yeah.
It's really good. It's been a good relationship so far.
And isn't that what Kunin did for cider, I think, at one point? I think they were getting like Vandermill cider, and they probably did it the same way because cider would fall under a small winemaker's license too. Although I know they make their own wine and they make their own mead.
Right.
I think that's how their cider was. So I get it. I've heard other places do that. That's very logical then.
Yeah, we get our cider from Blake's.
Oh, you do? Okay. Sorry.
Gotcha. We get our cider from Blake's, but we just can't call it Blake's Flannel Mouth.
So right.
We started naming it after our customers.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
We named one of them after our parking attendant, so
okay,
maybe he can sneak us in once in a while.
Well, that seems like a good person to name it after.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good trade-off.
I should start doing that. I'll get better parking hookups at places. I like that.
Good trade-off.
So have you been, now that you're almost a year in, have you been happy with the traffic that you're getting in Pontiac?
I've been happy with the traffic. I hope more businesses come to downtown
and
see what we're doing out there. You know, we signed a long-term lease. We signed a 15-year lease.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we brought in.
So you're in it to win it.
Oh yeah, we have a lot of equipment in there, and we're not going anywhere overnight. Really, if you look at the structure of downtown Pontiac, it's beautiful. All these older buildings are well kept. And also, you're a quarter mile away from M59 and a mile and a half from I-75.
Sure.
You know, hotels 9 minutes away.
We have lots of auto stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 12 hotels in Auburn Hills, 9 minutes away. You're right on Woodward Avenue there. And this is not a rumor. This is real talk from the Oakland County Treasurer, Andy Meisner, that northbound Woodward and southbound Woodward, instead of four lanes each way now, they will be two ways each. So
really?
In the near future.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so northbound Woodward would go north and south. Southbound Woodward would be north and south as well. And they're projecting just tremendous amounts of traffic flow will open up and where people can get in and out of downtown easily.
True.
So you're not just bypassing the entire downtown and going to
it. Because that's really how it's designed today. It's designed to bypass it.
Yeah. Yeah, and they did that when Pontiac Motors was there. A lot of people complained. A lot of the auto workers complained of it's taking us 2 hours to get home.
Sure.
So that's why they put the loop in there.
Now that's not the case.
No. So they
the
have,
opposite.
Yeah, they have most of the funding to do it, and they're very close to actually finalizing that. It's in the last stages. So that'll help, create more traffic, and more traffic means more business. But no, I'm excited about it. Like I said, we've had a tremendous response from the residents of Pontiac, Waterford, Keego, Troy, Bloomfield, Lake Orion, Commerce. We're drawing people from everywhere. And it's really awesome. And like I said earlier, we do it right, and it shows on Yelp and Facebook and all those reviews.
We're in a world where people can look stuff up pretty easily.
Oh, yeah.
So they can quickly tell. And then, if they may just read that and say, all right, I'm going to go somewhere else because of that. So that's an important piece. I live and die. TripAdvisor for me and Yelp to a certain degree, and then Facebook, Google. All those places can give reviews for my tour company, and I pay attention to it. Trust me.
Well, a lot of people do.
I want to make sure everyone's saying good things. I'm amazed how some of these breweries, it doesn't matter who, some just don't pay attention to it. Negative things on there, and then they don't go back and comment.
Yeah.
And wow, like that's just 101 stuff of customer service that you should be doing that.
You have to. If there's a problem, you have to fix it.
Sure. Own up to it, right? Something could be off. Everybody's going to have a bad day. A server could do something wrong. Food could do something wrong. A beer could have done something weird. All that's going to happen. And I think customers get that. And at times they'll voice it. And then if they feel like someone's listening, then they feel like, okay, cool. They care and they want to make it right.
Well, we're human. So there's going to be mistakes made, whether it's in a kitchen or a server. So my thing is, and I tell my managers the same thing, fix it now. Don't wait till the customer.
Easier to fix it now.
Fix it now. And, we can always get their business card and maybe, mail them a small gift card for next time.
Sure.
And say, hey, we acknowledge we made a mistake. Let's fix it. We'd love to have you back here again. Give us another chance.
That's definitely what I do. Yeah. I've had plenty of challenges at times running when it's a customer-facing business like what you're running, what I run. You're just going to screw up somewhere and you gotta, can I get back to that? Can I get an opportunity to get back to that person and make things better? Cause you want them to come back or you want them to say good things. Yeah. And, I'm amazed at times where I've gone into, breweries, bars, whatever, and had negative experiences and then nothing.
Yeah. I believe it. Or, you never hear from the manager or anybody from there. We had a lady came in and she had a party of 12. Was her birthday this past Saturday. And somehow we missed her table and we didn't set up a table for her. So they had to wait 5-10 extra minutes.
Okay.
And we ended up giving them a table that was a little smaller than normal. And, I went up to her towards the end and they were having a good time. I kept my eye on the table. And I said, I really want to apologize. She's like, no, it's no big deal. I said, well, it's a big deal to me. This is your party. You chose us tonight and you're here. So we want to make it right for you. So, I bought them dessert and they were fine. She didn't want, she wasn't asking for anything, but I mailed her a small gift card and I said, I'd like you to come back and celebrate your birthday again.
Oh, I like that.
So,
okay.
So she responded. She goes, "I just want to let you know, you guys were wonderful that night. At least you acknowledged it, and no one's ever done this for us before." So little things like that, you know.
But they add up,
Of course. And now, you know, if she tells 20 other people that this happened, and
that's what I tend to do. Yeah. That's how I am. If I have something like that happen to me, and someone fixes it, I want to tell people about that, right? Because I care that business cared about me.
Oh yeah.
And I want that. I want other people to know that for sure.
And I let my staff know all the time. If I'm not there at that moment, it's okay for you to do this. I give you authority. Go ahead and do
right.
it. Fix it.
So that stuff always comes from the top. It always comes from the top down, yeah. doesn't it? See, absolutely. If you believe that, you cascade that down to you know, your managers and the front end people, and then that shows. Right, that's pretty important in the scheme of things. Well, okay. That is probably about all the questions I had. Do you have any kind of events coming up that you want to talk about? And then we'll kind of wrap up our talk here.
We do. We're going to do a candy and beer pairing here pretty soon. And,
well, that sounds cool.
In April, yep, with Mel's Toffee.
Okay.
She was just in there in our brewery to shoot a small video commercial for her business. So we're excited about that. We'll announce that very soon. We will be at the beer festival in Grand Rapids.
So end of February, you're there. In April, you're going to do this candy beer pairing.
Yes. And then in May, we'll be at the World Expo.
In beautiful Frankenmuth, Michigan's little Bavaria.
our first time there, we were able to get in. We didn't make it in time last year. And we're also participating in all the Zoo Brew events.
Okay. So the stuff at the Detroit Zoo.
Yeah, I think they're doing 3 or 4 a year now.
I don't actually know. Is that how many they do a year?
Okay. I know 3 for sure, and I think they're adding one more.
Okay.
It sells out every time.
Yeah, I've never been able to go to one.
3,000 people. So
I live so close to there because I live in Berkeley. I bike by where the zoo is all the time, and I always say, one of these days I'm going to go to that.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. Something also more exciting than anything to us is it might be small to a lot of people, but we're able to put our beer in cans to go now. 16-ounce four-packs.
So you got like the little crawler type of machine that little canning kind of machine that I'm seeing in a lot of breweries now?
I call it the espresso machine.
Oh, it's okay. Really, I like that, espresso machine.
It's really that small. And
16-ounce
fills. But we're able to package four-packs and sell them out of the brewery for now.
Well, that's exciting to do that. That's definitely what people are asking about. I talk to a lot of breweries now. I'm in a lot of breweries, and they all seem to be moving in a direction like that. I mean, I'm excited that you brought a growler today and a couple cool pint glasses for me to try to have at home here. But I see where the canning is a huge advantage. I've definitely purchased in that way now. Yeah. And you also have a few kegs in the market. Is that correct?
We have a few kegs out there. 8-degree Play-Doh came to the Eastern Market Beer Festival. And I think they spent 10 of their first 12 tokens with us.
Yikes. Wow. And, okay.
They were loving the Apricot Belgian Ale, and they were loving the
That's a great beer.
Yeah, the Augustus Gloob, the double chocolate milk stout. They were loving that.
Oh, I didn't have that. Okay, that sounds yummy.
Yeah, good stuff.
So they were excited, and they're buying a few kegs they have on at 8 Degrees Plato Detroit.
In Detroit, yes. Beer Baron also has a couple of our kegs. They have the Warcry IPA and the Belgian Apricot, and they sold out of the Apricot just a couple of days ago.
So you're kind of sticking your toe in the water at a few select places playing with that. Is there plans to do more of that, or is it going to be kind of selective because that's just how much you can produce?
You know, we can produce more if we take away a tap or so at the brewery.
Okay.
And I'd be able to put in a bunch of different bars. But I always say, you know, if people knock on our door, then we'll answer. We'll be happy to sell them our beer as well. Brad Teagan at Three Blind Mice also has a couple of our kegs. So just, you know, a few small places like that.
Cool.
But we're excited. But the canning is a lot of fun. We have two beers in four packs right now, the Apricot Belgian Ale and the Warcry.
Okay. So kind of your two better sellers, you think, in the scheme of things?
Better sellers. They're probably tied with about 3-4 other beers as far as.
Okay. Well, I guess you got such a big list that makes sense.
Yeah. But those were, let me just say that those were the first two that we made logos for.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Oh, I guess I should have asked it that way, right? Yeah. Those are the ones you had labels set up for. Yeah. So that does make sense.
But then we have a generic label if you were to walk in and say.
And you could write it on there.
Yeah, I want the Scotch Ale. I want four cans of that. And
okay.
We can make that happen for you as well. I just want to thank you for having me here.
Thanks.
First of all, it's been a lot of fun.
I'm glad you could come out.
Yeah, it took me a couple of tries. But
you made it, though. You made it, and that's what matters. I appreciate you bringing out the growler and the pint glasses and talking with me.
Yeah.
So for everybody out there, this is Lee at Fillmore 13 Brewery in Pontiac. Yep.
One last thing, and I apologize. I just want to really thank our staff for just an amazing job. Tom Davis, our general manager, of course, Bo Holcomb, we talked about before, and Howard Williams, my business partner. Just really
always got to thank your business partner.
Absolutely, just just an amazing team, and keep up the good work. So,
well, thanks a lot, Lee. I thank you for coming in on the Beer Tour Guy Show, episode 9 here at the Podcast Detroit Studios. You can learn more about the Beer Tour Guy Show at MotorCityBrewTours.com or the Better on Draft website. I'm also featured on there. I'm their kind of second show on there. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Coming up next month, I will be interviewing the two brothers from Lily Seafood and Brewery in Royal Oak. Should be a real fun conversation with those two guys, bringing some new blood into a place that's been in Royal Oak for a long time. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.